Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comics Dungeon. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Cole Hornaday.
I am full of stars.
Yes, you are. Chris Casso.
I just want to watch House Hunters now.
And, of course, Nicole Lamb.
And I'll watch Ace of Cakes.
Alrighty. Yeah. How is everybody seems to be in a good mood today.
Now, I told you, I'm full of stars.
Everybody is made of star stuff.
Alright, so yeah, it's a cold evening here
in the northwest. Yesterday in Kirkland, Washington, it was 44 degrees at 7 o'clock.
Dang.
Yeah, surprising.
So how you doing over there in Kirkland, Washington?
It's lonely over there.
No.
Really?
Yeah, it's very lonely. Yeah, so come visit me. I'm going to guilt you all into coming to my shop.
Yes, go visit her.
Guilt's a good thing.
It's good.
Weaponize it.
Well, we're doing a lot of really great changes over there. People are really digging it, so it's exciting stuff happening. It's just there's a lot of hello.
do you have any events, any book clubs, anything happening at Comics Corner?
Not at the moment, because I can only manage so much right now, but I will be looking to expand in the future, maybe in 2019.
Cool.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, that is just around the corner.
I know.
Speaking of things happening, anything happening at the Comics Dungeon coming up that we should mention that I forgot to ask you about before we started rolling? But hey, what are you going to do?
No, we're going to be just kind of gearing up for the holidays here. And we will be doing an end of year sale, but we don't have the plans just yet for that. We just came off of Jet City Comic Con, which treated us really well.
Mm-hmm.
We did better than we did last year, and we did really well last year. So that's all good. This has been a busy couple weeks because it's been like two conventions and because Bellingham happened.
Yeah.
And
you've been getting lots of collections and things.
Lots of collections and
things
stuff.
Things have been moving around. And
yep. We might be getting some really cool Silver Age collections in pretty soon. We're working on them. So keep your eyes open for that if you want some old stuff. But yeah. Not too much else. We do have the book clubs coming up that Nicole is still running.
Yep.
We're going to work her to the bone.
Third Fridays. I think it might be earlier in December. I don't know when this rolls out.
This will drop on November 12th.
Okay. Somebody kill time. Cole, go.
Cole, the panel jumper.
Hey, and get your calendars out, folks, because believe it or not, we've actually set a date for the Panel Jumper Live Chapter 7.
Oh, my God. Chapter 7.
Chapter 7 will be happening on February 22nd at West of Lennon, Fremont at 8 p.m. Yeah, and I've already... what's the matter?
That's my birthday.
It is? Oh my goodness!
Don't sing for me. Don't.
Well, I'm going to save it for the 22nd.
Don't.
Silly bean.
Well, that's if he...
That's what I mean. Don't do that.
Bean face.
That's if he, you know, be with us on his birthday.
Yeah. No, he's going to have to be with us because we can't do the Perfect Bound podcast live without... You guys,
Cole, you're beautiful. Thank you so much. That was very useful.
I have more to say.
I'm going to interject.
I've
our next book club is going to be December 14th. So it's on second Friday.
Second Friday,
yeah.
December 14th,
and it's going to be Hellboy. We're going to be going into Hellboy.
Hey, should make you happy.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was being obnoxious. What did you talk about? Were you talking about something that I supposed to
You are being
about?
Recorded now. Remember
tag
that.
Me back. We'll just keep going.
So, did you have more to say about the Panel Jumper Live?
I just wanted to say that I've already booked like three acts, and Ben and I are hammering out the script for the Panel Jumper web episode number 8 called Kaiju A Go-Go. Are
nice.
We sticking with that title?
I don't know. I just put it in there because I couldn't think of anything else.
Well, I came up with three titles.
I know you did.
Like, Kaiju A Go-Go.
Kaiju and You.
Howdy Do Kaiju. And I can't remember what the third one was.
Yeah. But yeah, I just sent Cole the draft number 2 of the script last night.
So we're hammering that out. So things are happening. Thanks for your patience while we took a little bit of a breather there. But I think we are refreshed and ready to lock and load, rock and roll, and burn on entry.
And speaking of social media, Cole, the Panel Jumper recently has a new form of social media, don't
we? That's right, we do. But the Panel Jumper actually has its own Instagram now that our beloved Amanda Ray is handling. So,
nice.
You know, please find the Panel Jumper Instagram on Instagram and like it a lot. Like it twice or three times even.
Speaking of Instagram,
fake accounts and like it through all those accounts.
Ben Lawrence, you're on fire with these transitions, man. Yeah, Corner Comics. I just set up an Instagram for Corner Comics. It's corner_comics_, because some apparently there's people who have Corner Comics as their name. But I post something every day, and usually it's store-related, and it'll probably go into whatever, whenever I get back to reading, I'll probably post things about that. But yeah, and also our Facebook is a good hub for just information in general. I always put the shipping lists there every day, too. Or not every day, every week. Yeah, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Neato. Rock on. Well, everybody's doing social media. Well, I have just been... I just started reading Batman White Knight, which is this Sean Murphy title that I've been looking forward to. And I bought the trade here at Comics Dungeon last time we were in. And I just... I haven't finished it. I just started it last night, actually. And I'm really enjoying it. Mm-hmm. But PaceMagazine.com had an exclusive a couple of weeks ago that... the Murphyverse is going to continue on with Curse of the White Knight. And that makes me excited because I'm really enjoying the title. I'm glad that there's going to be more.
Yeah.
Nice. Batman White Knight was a really unique storyline that what I loved about it, reading the interview with him in Paste, is that the plot, the story idea was something that he came up with watching Batman the Animated Series.
Yeah, like when he was 12.
So he has been teasing and working this idea through his all the way through his childhood, his adolescence, and his adult life. I'm like, and that's honestly, I think that's where really solid ideas come from. You can always tell an idea that's half baked or undercooked or just raw off the vine and really not particularly edible. But versus an idea that's been, you know, simmered, and I'm using all types of cooking metaphors.
Yeah, it's great. Let's just do a cooking show now.
Seasoned.
You know? Well seasoned. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can tell those brilliant ideas. And he's a brilliant artist, and I like the way he thinks. Mm-hmm. I am actually looking forward to the next series that he does.
There's a splash page in, I think, like issue number 3 or something, where it shows the Batcave, and it's all the Batmobiles through time are in there. And it's great. Now, I was under the impression that White Knight was an Elseworlds story.
Yeah, it's its own thing.
See,
that's my question.
But it was so successful that they're like,
it could still be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. There's plenty of ongoing Elseworlds.
Well, you know what? I can't track what is and what isn't anymore with all the reboots. Seriously, with all the reboots.
Yeah.
And he actually does that thing where he recognizes that there are two Harley Quinns in this universe and sort of like, you know, kicks the one he doesn't care for to the curb and starts utilizing the one that is more in line with the animated series. Is that what he did?
Yeah, I absolutely love that because for the past like 6-7 years, the Harley that DC's been like leaning on just doesn't feel like the right Harley.
Suicide Harley.
So it's just kind of like, oh, that's because it's not. That's a great idea. I wish that was the actual take in the main books. Although that would get confusing. So it's nice that it's restricted right now.
Mm-hmm. And that's something that I withdrew from a lot of DC reading, and I was confused by the fascination, young women's fascination with Harley Quinn, because every time I picked up a Batman comic, she had no agency, and she was just a toy for the Joker at some point, or just a sociopath, and I didn't find her to be an enjoyable character at all, whereas the character from the animated series who would, you know, pal up with Poison Ivy and defy the Joker was a character I thought was really, really intriguing and really fun and I adored. Mm-hmm. But I came to really dislike Harley Quinn as a character because she had lost all that agency. And I don't even get me started on the Suicide Squad movie, which is just wretched.
I think like when you're like a young guy and you want to kind of go to that lowest common denominator, like people who like the Deadpool and stuff like that, which, you know, I think has its merit as well. But I think girls like to be able to play that out. And I see that a lot in young girls being able to, you know, dress scandalous and things like that and try to get away with being like over the top or saying what they want without like as much repercussion or care. Mm-hmm. I think it's something that they like to play out, even though it's not an empowering place to be. And the Harley from animated series is a powerful person and overcoming stuff, you know? And so that's maybe something they can grow into being that kind of Harley.
That's a really good point. It's a really good insight.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's very helpful to me.
Because I was wondering that, too. I went to the Suicide Squad viewing, and there were girls dressed like that, you know, like scantily clad and stuff. And I was like, why? you know, and in that movie, there's just like butt shots and all different kinds of stuff about Harley. And I was like, eh. I like Margot's portrayal for the most part for what she was handed. Mm-hmm. But it was like, eh, I didn't really need like saucy butt shots, but you know, each to their own. Saucy
butt. Sean Murphy says that he received no pushback from DC or the readers about his decision to include both Harleys.
Mm-hmm. So, right, because cha-ching, cha-ching, yeah, exactly. Cha-ching, 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 cha-ching.
We could make how many toys now?
Sure.
If you didn't get any fan pushback, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. Cool. So, yeah, Curse of the White Knight coming whenever. He says he's still working on it, so probably late 2019 it'll start.
And we'll see if he can make people care about Asriel again.
I know,
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's who he's bringing in this series, yeah.
And mm-hmm. I was like, oh, shouldn't I have not have thrown out all my Asriel sort of
no,
Asriel
yeah, go
books.
Ahead. You could get them back right now for the same price. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I get on that fast.
Or my Asriel action figure.
Oh. I don't.
Anyway, let's move on.
I happily dumped all that stuff.
Goes with your Gargamel action figure.
Yes. See, that's where I go to. Smurfs. Yeah. Okay. The Boom Studios had announced that they had picked up a web comic called Husband and Husband from Jonathan and Aaron Ferrara. And then it came out that there might have been some plagiarism. Another creator, and I'm going to butcher this name, Ngozi Ukaku, claimed that the artist for Husband and Husband had plagiarized their popular webcomic Check Please and posted a screenshot where it's one overlaid over the other. Mm-hmm. And it's close. It's pretty mm-hmm. close. It looks like a rotoscoping, you know, different details. And the artist copped to it, admitted it. They were running a Kickstarter at the mm-hmm. time to mm-hmm. produce a different title.
Right.
So they canceled that Kickstarter. But then Boom canceled the publishing of the web series Husband and Husband.
Yeah.
So that happened.
Yeah. Well, it's not unheard of. Every once in a blue moon, you know, I remember Keith Giffen did it a couple of times in the 80s, and because we didn't have social media back then or the internet, he didn't get under a tremendous amount of fire. But with comics, sometimes there's a fine line between doing an homage and actually ripping somebody off. And he had borrowed panels from like Quarter Maltese or something like that.
It's called swiping.
Yeah.
And it happens quite a bit, and there's fine levels of if it's okay or not from time to time. I remember a little bit of his.
Yeah.
There's a lot of it going on with Greg Land and a few other guys. So this looks like a swipe.
Yeah, it's the apology is, it goes, words cannot express how sorry and full of regret I am now. I am such a huge fan of theirs. Their work in comics, and I got too inspired, and I see now what I did by drawing from that inspiration was wrong. Literally drawing from that inspiration.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Disney swipes from themselves all the time. Oh, yeah. It's really interesting to see.
That's budget restraints. And yeah. We can have an episode about swiping down.
Is this
the line.
Yeah, is this a bigger issue in comics?
Yeah, there's been quite a bit of swipes. And like you said, it's like sometimes you could say it's more tribute and homage. One of my favorite manga creators who does Battle Angel Alita, there's a sequence where he lays out a page where she's fighting ninjas and they all look exactly like the layout from a Frank Miller Daredevil. Mm. And it's just kind of like, but there's like three other things in his career that are very much tributes to Frank Miller. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, I'm leaning towards giving that tribute over swipe.
Right.
You know, but also I give him lots of leeway. Yeah. So
well, and people, artists do cover swipes all the time of a famous cover.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If they are an artist of merit, they will, you know, they will make a little note on it. John Byrne used to do it all the time. In fact, he would do it to himself a lot. Yeah. But credits. He was such a popular artist back in the day that, you know, he was reviving Silver Age characters and stuff like that. So he was swiping or paying tribute to Silver Age imagery. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm.
So Boom canceled Husband and Husband, even though the plagiarism did not occur in that title. Is this do you think this is just basically Boom wanting to distance themselves
probably
from these creators?
Yeah, PR distance. Yeah.
Yeah. It's unfortunate, but yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Well, moving on. You know, in the comics, you can stay as young as you want forever. But apparently people are getting old. Yeah. We have old man Logan. And soon we're going to have old man Quill. And we're going to have an old universe.
There's... Because
there's also another old man Hawkeye's.
Yeah, Hawkeye.
And there's old lady Harley is out now, too.
Old lady Harley.
Yeah, and they did old lady Laura for Wolverine.
Yeah.
What's the market?
I don't know.
I mean, why?
Okay, so we know that Mark Miller's old man Wolverine, or Wolverine old man Logan, came out a long time ago.
Right.
Like, what, 10, 11, 12 years ago. And then Secret Wars happened, which then incorporated that universe as part of the multiverse and sewed it into the regular universe, which is why we had an Old Man Logan series that I think it says in the article there who did that. I can't remember.
Jeff Lemire did a bunch of it.
Yeah, there's somebody else who they
I
said.
Read it
and like,
I don't remember.
And then other teams took over and they went for a really long time.
Yeah, yeah.
And
number
they
50
also brought,
just came out.
Yep.
Yep.
And that's actually the last issue, thankfully. Yeah,
until Dead Man Logan comes out.
That's right. Dead Man Logan is now a thing.
Yeah.
So Hawkeye was in that original Mark Miller series. And so they brought him in as Old Man Hawkeye and he had his own series. And then it's just spiraled out of control. And I guess it's because that was a popular series. The Secret Wars thing ended up being very fruitful. I guess they got teams on that were good.
The movie came out.
The movie came out,
Logan.
And so
everything blew out even more.
Even more.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now it's just, well, what would the Guardians of the Galaxy be doing in this universe? Like,
right.
I guess what I'm curious about is, you know, growing old is not particularly sexy. And they're not really giving us what it means to be old, because I was intrigued with, I want to see these characters grow old, but be old people and
grown
be challenged
when
by
they get out
they're
of
they're just be challenged by those things, and they're not sexy, and they're not, their bodies are not, you know, they don't look like bodybuilders anymore. That's what I would like to see,
mm-hmm.
Because that type of storytelling is really risky. Stephen King wrote the novel Insomnia, and the protagonist is like this 70-year-old man who's just lost his wife, and he's a very lovable character. And I was like, wow, I actually contemplated what it would look like to tell superhero stories of older people, of old heroes that just their bodies don't work the way they're supposed to. Would it be romanticizing, or would it be actually a really experiment in a comic book drama? I was really curious about that. It's not really happened to my recollection, but please tell me I'm wrong.
Well, I mean, the original Wolverine Old Man Logan did have him like, you know, not doing anything,
right.
You know, just trying to keep everything at bay.
And that's so beautifully captured in the Logan film of his body giving up, his support group is gone. I was just rewatching clips of Logan the other day, realizing I really need to rewatch that movie because I despise all the X-Men films, but that movie came out of that, and it's such a brilliant film.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really good film.
Yeah, unfortunately, with all the mainstream stuff, it's the Bruce Willis approach to old, which is like he's still an action hero no matter what.
Yeah.
And he actually still looks mostly fit.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't think of too many other superhero world stories where they're old and decrepit.
Run down.
Astro City, Tarnished Angel.
That's a really good example.
There what about go. Starlight? Is it still action hero? Because I haven't read that one.
Yeah, so that's if you took Flash Gordon and you turned him into Bruce Willis.
Yep.
Okay.
And so he's in his 60s and he's a little run down, but not that run down.
Okay.
Yeah. The only thing I could think of where they had like an older main character was Jodorowsky's something Sacred of the Mad Woman, whatever. And the main character is getting up there in years, and he's constantly like flatulent and pooping his pants in the middle of the story. So it's just like, that's the only time I've really seen it. Like, here's the main character, deal with it.
Okay, Treasure of the Sierra Madre, where Randolph Scott, the old Western actors are gone on their last hurrah.
Mm-hmm.
And actually that's a pretty brilliant story of what to do with old action characters and to tell their story, their last story per se, with dignity. And I guess that's what I'm talking about. It's like,
yeah,
to portray them with dignity.
Mm-hmm. I think this old man Quill is going to be like him, just like a worn out spinster or something, maybe. That could be good.
No details about the content of the story. It just says writer Ethan Sachs and artist Robert Gill are going to be doing it, and it's going to be out in February of 2019.
Mm, cool.
So look for that to complete your old comic book collection.
Your new old comic book.
Old
your new
gender old... specific name.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. All right. So one of the TV shows that I've been keeping up on or had watched in its entirety recently, one of the few ones that I made time to watch, was The Haunting of Hill House. I never read the book, but I really enjoyed the TV show. You read the book. I had the book, and I think I donated it when I moved.
That's
I don't
unfortunate.
Know why. I know.
Stephen
I wish
King,
I had kept
Stephen
it.
Stephen King in Daunce Macabre says it's probably one of the best American ghost stories ever written, and I agree with him. And the original film is fascinating. And I just finished watching the TV series, too, and think the TV series is quite brilliant. Before we got on mic, Nicole and I were talking about our disgust with modern horror and jump scares and how out of patience we are with that. And yes, there is that in Haunting of Hill House, but it is a beautifully constructed horror story, ghost story, because there's so much that is unspoken and unseen, and that's the beauty of the original Shirley Jackson yep. book and the film.
Yeah,
it's well paced out,
yeah.
so you don't get yeah. like jump scare. You're actually no. getting like atmosphere right. and character development
and you care about
creepy things, and yeah,
you care about what happens to these people, which you know builds on the horror.
People on Twitter are saying that it's giving them quite visceral reactions. Mm-hmm. Some going even so far as to say, like, it's giving them anxiety and nausea. And I wouldn't go that far with me, but I did enjoy it. It did give me goosebumps.
Did you watch it alone?
I did watch it alone
yes.
in my dark, scary apartment
okay.
building.
Okay, well.
yeah, and...
It's so, more than nausea. They're experiencing more than nausea.
More than nausea, yeah. It's. I mean, yeah.
Are they pooping themselves?
I don't...
What?
Well, I should hope
that's
not.
Twice we had self-pooping references in this episode.
No. There were... I know, what's... Every episode has a theme.
Yeah.
This one is expelling
Let's go for the hat
your,
trick.
Somebody... I'm not gonna...
Your body.
Oh, this is actually a clever Twitter name, so I'm gonna say it. RuPaul F. Tompkins says that Haunting of Hill House is making me terror vomit in joyful confusion.
Oh, dear.
I don't even know what that means.
I think that's called monstering.
That, I think, is more just, I don't know if they're actually
I
doing
don't think,
that,
yeah.
but I think there are people who are doing that. Like Exorcist, like can't watch
yeah.
thing, expelling
so,
fluids.
Right.
Yeah.
We don't need to talk about how I don't do that, but let's talk about how like this visceral reaction that people get from TV shows. Have you ever gotten them from comics? Have you ever read a comic and it's given you, say, goosebumps mm-hmm. or not? Maybe anxiety?
Mm-hmm. It's hard to get visceral for me.
When you've been around so long.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, actually, and I'm going to review it next.
Oh, excellent.
This actually creeped me out pretty darn well. And I'll when we do book report, I'll talk about
cool.
it.
Cool. Well, we'll look forward to that.
I was sitting alone in my apartment with my cat on my lap and reading this particular comic book. And I got kind of creeped out. And I can't tell you why.
At least you had your cat.
And then yes. Mr.'s head to the 360 and looked at you.
Oh, man.
Yeah, right?
Guys, oh, my God, I got to go home alone.
You got to go back to that cat.
I got to go yeah. back to him.
Mister's waiting for you.
Anyway.
Yeah.
I think I Am a Hero creeped me out because I was reading that alone by myself in
yeah.
my home at night. And I was actually creeped out by it, which was surprising because it doesn't happen to me very often.
Mm-hmm. It is a super, super creepy comic.
It's good. Yeah.
yeah. Yeah, cool. I've never had a... It's the wrong medium. The stuff that tends to creep me out is anything surgical, just because of a past experience I had. Mm-hmm. So noises and visual aspects of surgeries. Like I could be watching an utterly bloody horror movie and be like, man, that's cool. And
yeah,
then I flip a channel and watch an actual documentary on just like facelifts. I'm like,
yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So comics can't hit that for me because there's no sound in comics.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. Yeah. Interesting.
Cool.
Yeah.
Let's move on. And I found out that Batman and various other titles author Tom King was in the CIA. So that got
That's
me
wild.
To thinking, wow, what kind of stories does that man have to tell? Also, are there any other creators
in the comics world that have interesting other jobs.
And are those stories classified?
Are those
stories classified? So he can't tell them.
Well, yeah. Maybe we'll find out in further Batman issues.
Mm-hmm. The one person that we both came up with immediately was Jim Steranko, mm-hmm. Who has led a storied life.
Yep. Jim Steranko is a teller of tall tales, to be sure. And remember, Jack Kirby claimed that he based the character Mr. Miracle on Jim Steranko because Steranko was a sideshow escape artist. But Steranko also claims to have been was he a musician and a boxer?
So I think the boxer's there. In his early 20s, he performed as an illusionist, escape artist, right. close-up magician in nightclubs, and musician. And the first band in 1956 called the Lancers, claims that he put the first Go-Go Girls on stage.
That's right, yeah.
So,
boots and all.
Yeah. He was also a member of New York City's magicians group, the Witch Doctors Club. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he did some stuff that was fancy.
He also claimed to be like a thief or... I remember reading, but that was just like childhood shenanigans.
There's records of him being arrested with a bunch of other kids for thievery. Okay. Yeah.
He actually looks like he could work in Vegas. He's got that pompadour.
He's got the super pompadour. And always
like
has the sunglasses.
Tan, and
Yep.
He really does look like that.
Yep.
It's funny.
He's a showman.
Cool. Yeah,
he's a total showman.
Alrighty.
And he changed comics too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Who else?
Any others?
Oh, yeah. Charles Soule is a lawyer.
Nope. Still is, right?
I believe so.
I think he still practicing.
Yeah. Practices.
Yeah, and he wrote the She-Hulk series where she's a lawyer, and it was
so
great.
Was there was and he writes Matt Murdock. Yeah, so
it was
just
really
keep giving him lawyers.
Absolutely.
All right,
and we thought of Christopher Priest. Too.
Christopher Priest was a bus driver and a
has been a priest.
Yes. Yeah.
So when he quit writing comics for a while, he went when he quit writing after Black Panther and Quantum and Woody, he went back to the ministry apparently. Mm-hmm.
And he also said that he preferred the bus driving job over comics.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Yep.
All right. Cool. Well, thank you all. Let's move on to book report, everybody. And Nicole, let's start with you. What do you want to tell us about?
Oh, let me get into this fancy technology.
New tech.
I know. I'm so fancy. So, I've been told time and time again that Jeff Lemire is great. And specifically in the context of... you're doing Scott Snyder. Never mind. Specifically in the context of Gideon Falls, and it's supposed to be a horror comic. And I don't know if I've mentioned it here on the podcast before, but I'm usually not scared or creeped out by any American horror comics. Mm-hmm. They just don't tend to hit it that well for me. So I was very, very skeptical about Gideon Falls. Finally, it got on my little Hoopla app for the library, so I decided to read it because it's selling out. So it's like I can't even grab a copy. So it's written by Jeff Lemire and Andrea Sorrentino does the art, and they work together on an Old Man Logan series at some point. And it follows this one guy who seems to be obsessed with trash and thinks that he's finding these little bits of clues and information in the trash, that something supernatural, something is trying to tell him something. And then you also see this other story of this preacher who is getting moved to this small town because of... you find out later, like, he has some alcohol problems, and he thinks that maybe they're just shoving him to this town, and all this weird stuff starting to happen. People say that they see this black barn, and some people are like, that's ridiculous, that's stupid, and there's, like, a missing boy from many years ago and stuff, and it's just these two parallel stories of these two people experiencing these weird things. Norton is the guy who's going through the trash, and he has this therapist, and the therapist is like, well, you're just having an episode again. But eventually she starts seeing something too. And then it's like, well, what is this? What are we going to do? And I'm assuming at some point the storylines are probably going to merge. That's what it seems like. Mm. My speculation is that the young boy who disappeared is Norton, but I don't know that for sure. So it's not a spoiler. It's just a speculation. Mm. But I actually like Sorrentino's art on this. It almost looks like he's tracing like real life photographs, or not even tracing, like, you know, when you put those weird filters over stuff that makes it look like it's a watercolor something, it almost looks like that, but it's to a point where it works. It's not actually weird. It's not like, oh, you're obviously doing something weird. It's like, no, but did you draw it that way to look like a filter? So I think it's an interesting thing. It's, it, it didn't creep me out. It didn't sway me on American Horror. But it was very well crafted, and it definitely had me sitting there going like, oh, I wonder if this is this and that is that and whatever. So, you know, if you are on the Jeff Lemire train, you might want to ride this ride. And if you're looking for something interesting, well crafted in the horror genre, I think that this is a good one to try as well. It's still ongoing as well.
Was it more spoopy than spooky for you?
I don't know. There's some really good moments in the art that are very spoopy.
Okay, very spoopy.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, omnipotent, like weird, creepy barn with red background and, you know, like people coming in the night and being like, they told me that, like that kind of stuff, you know, and then like these weird grins and stuff. So I could see people who are not jaded, like I am, being like, wow, that's really creepy and unsettling. Mm. But I'm like, oh, look at that guy. That's a good guy. You know, like, oh, and the barn did the thing. Oh, that's interesting. So I'm just more outside of it than immersed in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Cool. But that's just me. It's really hard to sway me these days. I'm a tough nut to crack.
All right. Cool. Yeah. Thank you, Nicole. Chris Casso, what do you got for us?
Well, since you did that and you did Weatches, or you will do Weatches.
I haven't gotten to Weatches.
You'll get to it.
I'll do another spoopy one. So I read Songs for the Dead from Vault. Yeah, Vault. And this is one that I now have memories of it coming out.
Yes.
But I actually didn't realize it came out. And then the trade came out and it magically showed up in the store and I forgot I ordered it. I am on autopilot in many ways. And it is written by Andrea Fort with Michael Christopher Heron and illustrated by Sam Beck. And the main reason I figured I'd make sure to check it out was one customer was just like, oh, I really just like the art style. And I do really like Beck's art style here. But also when I started looking through it, there was a zombie squirrel. And I really like that. And so essentially the main character, Bethany, is a necromancer, but she's a nice necromancer. And necromancy is basically, it's like a profession or an ability. It just depends on if you yourself are an ass. And it just turns out most necromancers tend to be kind of evil. So she's on the quest to prove that necromancers can be good. And she's very optimistic, and she just wants to like do good and help people and not accept money for it. And she meets a mercenary who's really good at being drunk and murdering people. And they hit it off and they go on a quest together. And it's just a fun concept, and I like the art style and good characters. And one of the things Bethany has is that if she focuses, she can bring back dead humans, but automatically most animals in the area that are dead just come back to life and they swarm around her like she's a Disney princess. And so you have these, like, there's this one cover for like the last issue, number 5, where she's just surrounded by like dead bears and owls, and they all look so happy but they're like skeletal.
She's playing a liar.
Yeah,
looks like.
She's a minstrel, so she's double down with her medieval D&D abilities. So she's a minstrel who also just happens to be able to summon the dead. And there's a cult that wants to hunt down and burn all the necromancers, so she's kind of trying to hide from them. And then her friend, who's pretty grumpy all the time, is like, fine, I'll help out, you know. And you could tell she's kind of got like the tiniest gold heart that she's trying to hide from people, but she's a badass. So it's a lot of fun. And so I do highly recommend it. First trade is out. It's $20 for like 5 issues worth. It's good value, and I got a lot out of it.
Cool. Right on. Thank you, Chris. And finally, Mr. Cole Hornaday, what do you want to tell us
about? I read the Witch's Bad Egg Halloween special from Scott Snyder and Jock. So years ago, I read the original, was it 8 or 9 part miniseries?
It was 5.
Was it only 5? Okay. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed it, but I was not ecstatic about it. I had higher hopes. What I enjoyed most about it was Snyder's discussion at the end about how he came up with the story, and he and I grew up in very similar rural circumstances, and it was kind of drawn from the myth and folklore of his neighborhood buddies and these witch creatures, witches with a Y, by the by, who inhabit our world just beneath our awareness, and manipulate and cajole and make pacts with humans so they can be fed and perpetuate. So, you know, I wasn't totally meh about it, but, you know, I could have taken it or left it. But I picked this up for some silly reason, and this actually scared the crap out of me. It is a dense story, wonderfully paced. So, but this is a different story. This is not the first family we met in the previous witch's story, all but disintegrates and winds up getting sacrificed to the witches. And but in this one, we're actually meeting a family, a son and a mother, who are part of a secret society who know about the witches and actually exist to destroy them, which is still nothing new. They're, you know, it's like they're witch hunters, they're vampire hunters. We've seen this kind of story before. But what was particularly creepy and insidious about this was that it really touched on a nerve for me about my feeling about raising children in this country right now. I feel very strongly that I grew up in a community where many people did not have children out of love, but had children out of status. And I know, because I was bullied and humiliated by those kids. They weren't being loved at home. They weren't being looked after at home. So they took it out on other people in their community, like me. And what we have is this young, we have this, the protagonist's name is Sebastian, and he and his mom are witch hunters, and they move from town to town, and they know more about the lore and life cycle of the witches than we've ever learned from the previous stories. And he's, and it's kind of you get slowly caught up and you realize that Sebastian is making friends with the neighbor boy, not because he needs friends, but because that neighbor boy's family are in the thrall of the witches, and they're actually raising that little neighbor boy to be food for the witches. And that's when I got super creeped out and realizing that this whole community is full of people who don't value their children and are just raising them to feed to the witches, the baby witches in the pits behind their house and in the woods for their own personal betterment. And that I thought was really scary, really creepy, and a pretty hardcore metaphor for what I experienced in my childhood.
Wow.
Did you?
I was more logistical. So if you wanted to go into
what's matter?
No. Did you ever see the movie Society?
No, I don't think so.
It's on Amazon.
Yeah,
check it out.
Society.
Yes.
Or
it's
should like a, he? Is yeah. it like gonna frighten him?
No, I'll tell you later.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, now you got me all intrigued.
This is after Mike time. Witches was a 6-issue series, okay. And then they've been publishing bits of the next part of the story in the Image Plus.
Right.
That was coming out with previews, and I don't remember how many parts that was. I couldn't quite track that down.
He mentions that in here.
And okay.
I think there's maybe one in the back. I like Snyder a lot. I just unfortunately don't read a lot of his stuff. I mean, he wrote the Court of the Owls Batman stories, right? Yeah. Which I thought were like really inspired Batman stories. But yeah, I've not done a great job of keeping up on his stuff, but I will pick up this whenever it shows
cool.
up.
All right, witches. Thank you, Cole. Well, that is Book Report. That is our show. Coming up is quiz time. But before I go, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bound podcast is brought to you by the Panel Jumper. See everything Cole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com, as well as Comic Extension here, 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford, or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsdungeon.com. Subscribe to the show on iTunes or however you get your podcast at perfectboundpodcast.com. Send us an email, perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. And now, friends, get your quiz hats on. It's quiz time, and this week the questions come to us from me.
Ooh.
We talked about Boom Studios canceling Husband and Husband after the creators were exposed for plagiarizing artwork for their subsequent title. So here are 5 other instances of plagiarism in the comics industry.
Number one, in 2012, Shia LaBeouf was accused of plagiarism at the Cannes Film Festival when audiences discovered that his directorial effort, HowardCantor.com, was copied from the 2007 graphic novel Justin M. Damiano by this Ghost World cartoonist.
Klaus?
Yes, mm-hmm. Daniel Klaus. Mm-hmm. Fun fact, LaBeouf was accused of plagiarizing his apology to Klaus.
Yeah.
Number two.
God, poor guy.
Incarnate was a radical comics graphic novel that was canceled almost as soon as it hit the shelves, once it was discovered that the creators plagiarized quite heavily from illustrations found on DeviantArt.com, as well as from the manga title Bleach. I'd never heard of any of this, but I was drawn to it because Incarnate artist Nick Simmons is the son of Gene Simmons, lead singer of what 1970s-era heavy metal rock band?
Kiss!
Indeed. Number three, in 1990, Marvel Comics plagiarized an image of Christian pop singer Amy Grant from her 1986 Best Of compilation album for a cover of one of their titles. They basically straight up rotoscoped her image onto one of the covers. Amy Grant's management team contacted Marvel that they were going to file a complaint about the cover. It was not a copyright issue as they did not have the copyright. Their complaint read, quote, "Many fans of Christian music consider interest in witchcraft and the occult to be antithetical to their Christian beliefs. Therefore, an image of Amy Grant or her likeness in association with this Marvel character is likely to cause irreparable injury to Grant's reputation and goodwill."
It's a cover of Doctor Strange.
It was a cover of Doctor
Strange. And was it drawn by Butch Geiss? I can't remember who drew it.
I don't remember who drew it, but it's basically a photo of her.
Yeah, it is.
Fun fact, Amy Grant went on to be one of the biggest pop singers of the 1990s, so having her image on the cover of a Doctor Strange comic didn't hurt one bit.
That was the first concert I ever went to.
Was Amy Grant?
Wow, excellent. Nicole.
It's not cool at all.
Wow. No, that's
super not cool. Wow. But I was really into it.
You just kind of dropped on the scale for me, honey.
I know.
Sorry.
All right. Number four.
I know.
Number four. Rob Granito is probably the most infamous plagiarizing artist, having actually appeared at multiple conventions selling artwork copied from other sources. Granito has reportedly been banished from a number of high-profile conventions for his unscrupulous practices of tracing or otherwise duplicating existing comic book artwork and selling it as his own, misrepresenting himself to convention organizers and other parties as a working professional, claiming to be the ghost creator of famous comic book works, and most distastefully attempting to strengthen his fabricated reputation by lying about a working relationship with the late Dwayne McDuffie. Following days of merciless exposure, mockery, and condemnation, the coup de grace came to Granito at 2011's MegaCon in Orlando, Florida. It was in the form of a brutal verbal smackdown courtesy of Mark Waid and Ethan Van Sciver. Granito is an uncommonly successful tracer artist, being someone who profits from the sale of other people's artwork that he has duplicated and modified in some slight way so as to make it plausibly different from the original. By tracing or otherwise recreating attractive illustrations and photographing them in a kind of work-in-progress fashion, Granito was able to convince visitors to his website that he was creating original works. He took this material to comics conventions to sell for profit and also accepted commissions for additional works. It is unknown how much money Granito has made with this scam, but he has been active for several years. I don't have a question here. I just want everybody to know Rob Granito's name and to stay away from him.
I remember this guy. He was like pathological because he believed his stuff. I mean, he believed it. He believed he was doing something.
It might have been really late at night when I wrote this too. I apologize for his line.
Totally okay.
The interesting thing about that too is that if it was able to get Mark Waid and Ethan Van Sciver to team up, that's because those two are at each other's throats right now.
These
right?
days,
Mark
yeah.
Waid's in a lawsuit, and Ethan Van Sciver, and he made a GoFundMe to help him fund the lawsuit, and it's because it's got to do with the comics gate stuff. Mm-hmm. And Ethan Van Sciver is helping to fund the other guy.
Oh my goodness!
Oh no, really?
Yeah, Ethan Van Sciver is kind of not so great on the political sphere these days.
What a tangled web we weave!
No
idea.
Yeah.
And finally, number five, Herland by Charlotte Perkins Gilman, published in 1915, is the story of an isolated society composed entirely of women, free of war, conflict, and and domination. And though no direct plagiarism may have occurred, many point to it as the inspiration which William Moulton Marston drew from to create this feminist superhero.
Wonder Woman.
It is Wonder Woman. And irony of all ironies, a lot of the text from these questions I plagiarized straight from the websites themselves where I got them from.
That's most of my quiz times is total plagiarism.
You do.
Thank you for listening. Yeah. Thank you for listening and watching, and we will see you next week.